Hi there, welcome to Explain This, a podcast where we try to explain complex things in simpler ways for people of all ages. I'm your host Jin Kim, and today I'm going to talk about the ever-elusive concept of irony, which is so interesting. Ironic, right? Well, no it isn't, because it is interesting. Don't worry, we'll explain what makes something ironic or not in this episode. Let's get started. Irony is a funny thing, because everyone uses it and thinks they know what it means, but actually most people don't. My favourite definition of irony comes from Blackadder, where Blackadder asks Baldrick, "Have you no idea what irony is?" And Baldrick replies, "Yes, it's like goldy and bronzy, only it's made out of iron." Okay, so that's not a definition, but a joke. Then again, today's episode is all about what words mean and don't mean, so it's kind of fitting. Before we delve into today's episode, I want you to think of the times you've used the word ironic. Was it when you're a mean teenage bully angrily telling someone not to naively believe what you're saying because you're, quote-unquote, just being ironic? Was it when you bumped into a friend you hadn't seen for a while and you were like, "Oh my god, it's so ironic to bump into you"? Or was it when you commented on how ironic it was that Agamemnon accepted the flattering invitation to walk on the purple carpet that will turn out to be his shroud when he dies? And don't you at me saying spoilers, that story is at least 2700 years old. Anyway, only one of those is properly ironic. How do we know which one? Well, let's explain what irony is to you as if you're a child. Imagine that it's raining cats and dogs outside. You're really excited to go outside today to skip in the meadows or make a TikTok video or go on a parade or whatever kids like to do outside these days. Instead of saying, "Oh, bummer, I hate it when it rains and my plans are ruined," you say, "Wow, what wonderful weather, I am absolutely loving it." What you just said now would be described as ironic. The reason being, what you said isn't what you mean. You're not actually trying to say that you like rain and your plans being dashed. Instead, you're making fun of the situation, saying the opposite of what you mean. And that's irony at its simplest. It's when someone says something that is the opposite of what they mean, or when something happens that is the opposite of what you expected. There's actually three different types of irony as well. There's verbal irony, which is when someone says something they don't mean or mean the opposite, like the "I just love rain" example. You might add some dramatic flair, like saying the "love" in a weird way, or throwing up your hands just to make it really clear that you don't literally mean that you love rain. There's dramatic irony, which is only in stories. This is when you, as the audience, know something that the characters don't. Like in a movie, when you just know the big baddie set a trap for the hero and you're yelling at the screen for him not to fall into the trap. Lastly, there's situational irony, when something happens that's the opposite of what you expected. For example, if a fire station caught fire, that'd be pretty ironic, because it's a building full of people dedicated to fighting fire. But irony is complicated, which is why people get it wrong all the time and say something is ironic when it isn't. For example, if you randomly win a free ticket to the new Barbie movie, you think that's ironic because you weren't expecting it. But not really, because for something to be ironic, it has to be the opposite of an expectation. As in, it's just really good luck to win free movie tickets, not ironic. What would really be ironic would be if you weren't planning on watching Barbie because you don't like fun, but you win some free tickets to Barbie. This is situational irony because you had no intention of going to the movie, yet you unexpectedly get free tickets to it. Similarly, you might be thinking, "Gosh, I really miss my friend Eve who moved overseas," and then you bump into her on the streets because turned out she moved back last week. That's also not irony, it's just coincidence. Because even though you were thinking about her, there's no reason for that coincidence to not happen. So you can see irony really isn't that easy, which is why a lot of adults get it wrong. Even worse, people think being ironic is a smarty pants thing to do, so sometimes they'll use irony to sound smarter or better than you. Or worse yet, they might do it intentionally just to make fun of you. This is what we call sarcasm, and it can be a really mean thing to do. So be nice, because words can have a lot of power. Remember, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can make someone feel happy or sad, which is literally the only thing that matters in this stupid world, to quote XKCD. Anyway, a lot of times, people use irony wrong when they're trying to sound smart and be sarcastic. And that's the best irony of them all. Welcome back. And I mean that. so it's not ironic. It'd be ironic if you were a troll and I really wish you wouldn't continue listening to my podcast, but fortunately, I've been blessed with awesome listeners like you, so there. Anyway, let's talk about irony. Irony is one of those things where the definition of the concept is pretty simple, but its execution and right usage is super complex and intricate. At its most basic form, the core of irony is when the surface meaning and the underlying meaning of what is said are not the same. This could be verbal or situational, as in words versus events. But there's actually a few caveats and extra conditions for something to be properly ironic, as we've mentioned before. The incongruity has to be intentional, which means coincidence and luck-related things are rarely ironic. Also, both the surface and underlying meaning have to be properly received by an audience. It doesn't have to be the same person that understands both meanings, that would be too simple. This is why irony often needs an innocent victim, as in it creates either humor or tension because someone doesn't see the true underlying meaning, while another party, such as an audience of a play, will see through the contrast between what is said and what is meant. If you're feeling lost already, don't worry, we'll go through it over and over with lots of examples. Irony is super complicated, which is why you can't blame people for misusing it all the time. At the same time, ignorance is never a good excuse, so we're here to learn, which is why you listen to this podcast, I hope. That and my sultry voice. The word irony comes from ancient Greece, from the word eironeia, meaning feigned ignorance. It's actually based on the name of a Greek comic character, Iron. And no, not comic like Marvel, but a comedy play. That said, there's a great thought that ancient Greeks viewed their mythology in a similar way to how we view the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but that's a complete tangent. Irony has probably existed for as long as humans have spoken. But some of the earliest recorded instances come from the OG master philosopher, Socrates. He practiced something called the Socratic Method, which would often use irony as a tool to explore ideas and discussions. I'm sure we'll cover the Socratic Method in full at some stage, but the gist is that it's a discussion where you keep throwing questions to tease out the details of an argument or thought, to really draw it out and explore it in full, encouraging the discussers to think critically. Socrates would use a form of this called Socratic irony when he would get into arguments with people, which was quite often. If someone was trying to argue something that Socrates thought was wrong or inaccurate, he would feign ignorance, hence where the word irony comes from, and play dumb. Instead of going, actually, or saying, you're wrong, he would instead go, oh, really? I didn't know that. Can you tell me more? And he would encourage the opponent to keep talking. He'd keep playing dumb and asking more and more intricate, probing questions to make the arguer elaborate on their theory or opinion. Eventually, if the person is indeed wrong or misinformed or just regurgitating an opinion, they'll say something that is inconsistent, paradoxical, or simply incorrect. Even better, they might realize they're in the wrong and just admit it. This type of irony is often used by parents to trap kids into admitting fault, such as throwing parties when the parents are away or eating the last cookie. Remember, your parents often know a lot more than you think. So if someone is playing dumb and asking you lots of questions, don't be lulled into a false sense of security. Better yet, try to know what you're actually talking about, and don't be afraid of admitting that you don't know something. Anyway, that was just to highlight that people have known for a very long time that words don't always mean what they literally say. Irony is just one form of that, much like imagery. Like any other literary device, you need to know to be able to use it responsibly. Otherwise you'd look a right fool, the kind that gets affect and effect confused, saying me and you instead of you and I, using the wrong there, or saying less instead of fewer. As much as I try to use Good England, I can't for the life of me get that last one right. Oh, we all have our shortcomings. So going back to the definition of irony, we can simplify it to when you say something that is contrary to what you mean, and there is a double audience. One party that only gets the surface meaning, and one party that understands the deeper, hidden meaning. And the same applies to events and actions. If something happens and it's the opposite to what was intended or expected, and someone notices the oddity or humor of that situation, it can be called ironic. Alright, let's break irony down into smaller chunks so it's easier to understand. Lucky for us, irony has three rather distinct types, which is probably why it's so hard to fully grasp it. There's verbal irony, dramatic irony, and situational irony. Let's start with verbal irony. So we've already talked about how irony can be in the form of words or events. This is why it's helpful to break it into the subtypes, so we can just focus on the wordy ones first. Verbal irony is most fitting with our original definition of irony, when you say something but mean something different. So if something unhelpful happens, such as spilling coffee on yourself, and you say, "Ugh, that's just what I needed," that's verbal irony. Because you're not literally saying that you needed to have coffee spilt on you, you're making fun of the situation by saying the opposite. Verbal irony is useful for various purposes. We've already seen a very Machiavellian use of verbal irony, where Socrates used it to feign ignorance to lead his opponents into trapping themselves with bad logic and poor knowledge. But we also see irony used to make fun of a situation to take the sting out of it, or, even better, for humour. You see this best in British humour, where verbal irony features quite heavily, to the point that there's a joke that Americans don't appreciate British comedy because they don't understand irony. But as many clever British people such as Stephen Fry and Simon Pegg have pointed out, it's quite evident that American people are very capable of recognizing irony. They just tend to find it uncomfortable and cover it up with a "just kidding" or pointing out it was a joke. Kind of like the classic scene where Borat is learning how to make "not" jokes in the USA. Anyway, back to what verbal irony is. So, at its face value, verbal irony seems pretty simple. Let's go through some more examples of verbal irony to really cement it in your minds. So there's the example of saying, "I'm loving this weather" when it's pouring down. There's the classic "good job" when you're demeaning someone for screwing up. Or saying someone must be fun at parties when you're trying to point out that they're dull or rude. Or when someone finally gets something and you say, "well, aren't you a genius?" All of those examples sound mean, don't they? That's because these examples of verbal irony are all included in another subset of language devices called sarcasm. Sarcasm is often confused for verbal irony, but they aren't the same thing. And yes, that's definitely a bit of a theme for today's episode. Irony is a very misunderstood thing. So, sarcasm and verbal irony often overlap, but sarcasm is more defined as a sharp, often satirical or ironic utterance designed to cut or give pain. So yes, it can be ironic because you're saying the opposite of what you mean, but the purpose of it is to inflict pain or make fun of someone. It tends to be bitter, caustic, and antagonistic, meant to be critical and insulting. Take this example from Winston Churchill, who, despite his many flaws, was pretty talented at using language. There's a famous story where Bessie Braddock tried to mock him for being drunk, and Churchill simply replied, "but I shall be sober in the morning, and you'll still be ugly." Here, what Churchill said isn't ironic. He meant exactly what he said. And yet, he is using aggressive humour to mock Braddock. An example of sarcasm. Whereas verbal irony doesn't have to be mean. All it is when the literal meaning is opposite to what is intended. Unfortunately, people, typically men with fragile egos who definitely didn't understand the true commentary of Fight Club and worship Tyler Durden instead of recognizing the irony of the situation, have a tendency to try put people down verbally, thinking that it makes them intellectually superior. There's a great quote by Oscar Wilde, the master of sarcasm and wit, that goes like this. "Sarcasm is the lowest form of wit, but the highest form of intelligence." At first listen, this sounds like he's criticizing sarcasm, then it sounds like he's praising it. Well, which is it, Oscar? The beauty of the quote is in how he squeezed in so much about the nature of sarcasm in such a short line. What Oscar Wilde is saying is that sarcasm can be used as humor or to look witty, but it comes across as cheap if you use it wrong. However, if you are intelligent enough to use it wisely, then you can use it effectively, such as using it to criticize questionable societal norms or challenging authorities, not verbally bullying innocent people who have less power than you. Anyway, that's my little rant on sarcasm. Use it wisely. So what are some examples of verbal irony without sarcasm? This would typically include situations where you're not mocking another person, but a situation, inanimate objects, or concepts, or yourself. For example, you might have had a really rough day at work and lament that you can't wait to do this all over again tomorrow. Or when a comedian says in a rather deadpan way, "it was a fantastic show. The audience loved it. I could tell by the looks on their faces," to suggest that the audience definitely did not love it. Or when you say people listen to your podcast because your voice oozes seductiveness, when you know it doesn't. Or at least you don't intend to. These kinds of examples show that you can still use verbal irony for humorous or uplifting ways without being a douche canoe. The more you think about irony, the more you'll pick it up. If you really want good practice, I suggest looking up some British comedians, such as Bill Bailey. You'll notice that verbal irony is often augmented by how it is delivered as well. If we go back to one of the examples, if I said, "It was a fantastic show. Oh, the audience loved it. I could definitely tell from the looks on their faces." It sounds a bit more genuine, like I really mean it. But if I say it like, "Yeah, it was a fantastic show. The audience loved it. Yeah, I could so tell from the looks on their faces." It sounds a bit different, doesn't it? We often change up how we deliver a line to highlight the irony of it. This might be in the form of emphasizing certain words, changing up the pitch, tone, or the beat of how we say it, also called paralinguistic markers. Or we might use nonverbal cues such as raising our eyebrows, winking, staring wide-eyed, or gesticulating wildly. All in all, there are a lot of cues that can help the audience understand the irony of what we're saying. And this helps create that duality we mentioned before, where someone who takes the words at face value won't get the deeper underlying meaning, whereas some people will get it. That's how irony is born. Interestingly, verbal irony is much harder to use in written text, because all of these verbal and non-verbal cues are gone. People have suggested that we need an irony punctuation mark, such as a back-to-front question mark, also called a percontation point. Also, it's probably important to mention here that people for whom English is not their native language, or neurotypical people, may find irony a lot more difficult to get, because they might not know the social rules of how irony works, or missed cues that may be obvious to neurotypical people. Just something to note. Yet another reason you shouldn't use sarcasm as armor for your fragile ego. We'll finish up our section on verbal irony with a meme I like from Star Wars The Phantom Menace. It's the scene where Senator Palpatine is telling Padme about his nomination as candidate to be the Supreme Chancellor. Palpatine says that this is
a surprise, to be sure, but a welcome one.
But we as the audience know that this was not a surprise, because Palpatine had masterfully planned for this to happen through his Machiavellian Sith ways. But since Padme does not know this at the time, Palpatine is clearly using irony, openly mocking Padme without her knowing, gloating of his secret success. Which leads us beautifully to our next section, dramatic irony. We've already mentioned that one of the fundamental principles of irony is the concept of a double audience. You need the innocent victim who only gets the superficial, surface meaning, while you also need someone to get the deeper, opposite meaning for irony to be realized. When it comes to the world of literature, be it books, plays, films, or storytelling, you can employ irony in a way so that these audiences are split between the fictional and real world. As in, the characters in the stories and the audience can have different understandings of the situation or words, allowing irony to occur. This is what we call dramatic irony, when the audience knows something that the character does not, so they can get the irony of a situation or words. This might be because the audience may have already seen the antagonist soliloquizing about his dastardly plans, so they know that the protagonist is falling into a trap, kind of like the Palpatine example from above. The same also applies to horror movies where you know the killer is waiting to ambush the protagonist around the corner, or when you just know Iago is manipulating Othello to make him believe that his wife is cheating on him, but Othello has no idea. Or it might be that the audience has had the pleasure of seeing all the different characters' points of view, so they know the full truth, while the characters only know parts of the truth. For example, there's a classic example of rom-coms where the two characters clearly are infatuated with each other, but it takes an entire hour for them to realize, while the audience is just rolling their eyes that the two of them are so oblivious. Dramatic irony can be created thanks to the privilege that the audiences of a story have of being a fly on the wall. They have access to more information than each of the characters do, which lets the storyteller create these ironic situations. There are three main stages of dramatic irony. First, you need to prepare the irony. For this, you need to set up the scene so that the audience has additional information that the character does not, such as the audience getting a glimpse of a "Do not enter! Death awaits!" sign as the camera zooms out while the characters obliviously walk into a dark cave without seeing the sign. Second, you need the suspension. This is when the irony climaxes and what the audience expected, i.e. certain death, happens to the characters, but from the character's point of view, this would be super unexpected because they didn't have that extra information. So it's the classic, "Oh no, no one could have predicted this" situation. The suspense adds drama and intrigue to a story, because even if the audience knows and expects it, they also know that the characters don't. So you have this situation where you feel tense because you're emotionally invested and worried that the characters won't see it coming and they'll meet a horrible fate. You know, like the meme of people screaming at the TV going, "Oh hell no, don't open that door!" A lot of emotions can come up during this phase. Tension, frustration, anger, anxiety, fear. This is why the last step of dramatic irony is the resolution. Because if the suspense doesn't break, it would be really frustrating. Like a TV show ending on a cliffhanger and then getting cancelled. In this phase, the full truth is revealed to the characters. The killer jumps out and confronts the victims. The characters realize that they both liked each other all along, and so forth. In the example of Othello, the scene where he accuses Desdemona of cheating and realizing that he was horribly misled is a great example of resolution. Dramatic irony is a powerful tool, because it can really heighten the experience of the audience as they vicariously live through the story, while also having control over the situation. Because how often in life do we wish we were omnipotent? Whether our crush likes us back, whether the risk we took will be worth it, whether everything will turn out okay. It will. Unlike life, stories give us a resolution. And we love the feeling of that tension and frustration and angst melt away as everything falls into place. Which is why dramatic irony features prominently in all good stories, exemplified by ancient Greek plays. Think of King Agamemnon, who proudly walks down the purple carpet after coming home from the war, not knowing that he will be shrouded by the carpet when he dies. Or how Oedipus proceeds to murder his father and weds his mother, all the while the audience knows because of the setup. A lot of tragedies employ the power of dramatic irony to highlight how cruel life can be, as well as people. Shakespeare was a master of dramatic irony as well, as you can see from all the examples from plays such as Othello, Macbeth, and Romeo and Juliet. So, if you want to write a compelling story that engages your audience, think about how you can use dramatic irony. What's something you can tell the audience that the characters don't know? How will you set up the double audience? How will you lead the story so that tension and suspense build, as the audience knows that the irony is building? What will happen when the characters realize the full truth and the irony is resolved? And like verbal irony, you can augment the dramatic irony through the use of sound effects, suspenseful music, extreme close-ups, flashbacks, and all sorts of literary and cinematic devices. Next time you feel anxious watching a tense movie or TV show, or you find yourself gripping your book tightly, try to see through the irony. It'll make you appreciate the story so much more. Let's take a short break now, and when we're back, we'll talk about the third type of irony, situational irony. As we saw from some of the examples in dramatic irony, irony doesn't always have to be something that is spoken. Sometimes, situations can be ironic too, because things happened in an opposite way to what you expected. A great example is the story of The Wizard of Oz, where, at the end of the journey, all of the protagonists find out that what they were searching for, after that long, arduous journey, they had all along. Like, Dorothy had her shoes that could take her back home, she just didn't know how to use them. The lion was actually courageous all along. The scarecrow is already a genius, and the Tin Woodman was already capable of love, so he didn't need a human heart. See? The real treasure at the end of an adventure were the friends we made along the way. Ugh. Anyway, that's a great example of situational irony. In a stereotypical story or sequence of events, the audience expects that when our heroes reach the Emerald City and find the wizard, they'll finally get what they were working hard towards. Because who doesn't love hearing a story about how hard work and tenacity pays off? But no, instead they find out that they had it all along and the wizard has nothing to offer them. Which, on one hand, is kind of nice that often we're searching for things we already have, we just need to look upon ourselves, and blah blah blah, but on the other hand, it's not what we expected. This is situational irony. Furthermore, we find out that the Emerald City is not a perfect city like the characters expected, and the wizard who everyone thought was some wise leader turns out to be a useless old sham with no powers. Irony upon irony. Situational irony is all around us. Like how, even when writing this episode, it was pointed out to me that one of my examples wasn't properly irony. So here I am making an explanation podcast on irony while using an incorrect example and badly explaining irony. That's ironic. But just as we've seen with other two types of irony, there are some important principles that need to be followed for a situation to be properly ironic. For example, let's say someone walks into the house with a large cake, and they trip and fall, dropping the cake. Some people might say, "OMG, that is so ironic." But it's not really ironic, because it's totally reasonable to expect someone carrying a large cake without any support to fall over. It'd be a different story if that person happened to be a professional gymnast with excellent strength and balance, and she was just touting that she would never do something so rookie as dropping a large cake. So it's very important that we still have that contrast in what is expected versus what really happened, plus that dual audience. If we didn't know ahead of time that the person who tripped was a skilled gymnast bragging about how they were not going to drop the cake, the situation is no longer ironic. It's only because we know the context that irony can be created. Otherwise, it's just a coincidence. Let's look at some more simple examples of situational irony. People using an elevator to go to a gym on the second floor to do some cardio on the Stairmaster instead of using the stairs. An environmentalist printing hundreds of flyers on non-recycled paper with the message, "Save the trees!" A doctor running over to attend to someone's injuries, only to trip over and hurt themselves and sustain a heavier injury. Selling a watch to buy your girlfriend an ornate comb as a gift, while she buys you a watch strap with the money she got for selling her hair. With all of these examples, you can see how there's nothing special about just using an elevator or just printing some flyers. It's the context surrounding it that's important, along with the fact that the people committing the ironic acts are oblivious to the humor of the situation. Situational irony has some interesting subcategories as well. One famous example is what we call cosmic irony, the concept that the universe, or the fates, or some deity, is playing a cruel trick on us mortals by subverting our expectations and causing an unlikely, ironic situation to arise. For example, the Titanic was touted as an unsinkable ocean liner, yet it sunk on its maiden voyage, resulting in a disaster that claimed more than 1,500 lives. Or the famous Twilight Zone episode, where a man who just wants to spend all of his time reading survives a nuclear holocaust, comes across a library, then breaks his glasses, losing the ability to read anything, saying, "That's not fair at all, there is time now!" Cosmic irony feels like the universe is playing a joke on us. We know that statistically speaking, all of these things are possible. But because our brains are so biased, we think that if there's a 99% chance something will succeed, that 1% chance of failure doesn't even exist. Listen to episode 45 to learn all about cognitive biases. This kind of bias that our brains are prone to allow for such cosmic ironies to exist. Because we expect something to happen. We fail to anticipate for the unexpected, or less expected things, technically speaking. There's a similar type of irony called poetic irony, where it feels like the universe is dishing out its own justice. Like in The Shawshank Redemption, where Andy is wrongly framed for murder, but is able to escape and live a life in Mexico, while getting the wicked warden arrested for his fraudulent activities. Hashtag karma, hashtag justice, hashtag poetic irony. Poetic irony is similar to cosmic irony, but there's a cathartic, unexpected resolution to a crime being rightfully punished. Both cosmic and poetic irony feature heavily in literature and media, because they make such good stories. We talked about how dramatic irony is effective at creating suspense and tension, then breaking that with resolution so that the audience can feel relieved. Cosmic and poetic irony add icing to this cake by addressing situations that seem so unlikely that it feels surreal. Being planning animals that like to predict the future, we feel kind of a perverse joy in seeing our expectations flipped on their heads, to be surprised. I like to think that these stories also help us stay humble and mindful that even the most unlikely things can still happen. Enjoy the simple pleasures of life, because you don't know when the rug might be pulled out from under your feet. But also, don't stress so much about all the things that can go wrong, because the universe seems to do whatever the hell it wants, irony or not. Anywho, there's also historic irony, which is a type of situational irony that we can only see looking back into the past. The New York Times were super critical and hated on crossword puzzles back in 1924, but now, they're the newspaper most associated with crosswords. So the act of hating on crosswords back in the 1920s was not ironic, but from where we are in the present, knowing that the newspaper is famous for its crosswords, the past seems ironic. Similarly, back during World War I, people used to call it the Great War, or the war to end all wars, not World War I. Because naturally, people didn't expect there to be another world war to happen so soon. It'd be pretty pessimistic to say, "Oh, we should call this war the First World War, you know, because surely there'll be more." Which, again, seems very ironic to us now, because we know the world plunged into the Second World War nearly 20-odd years later, partially because of the geopolitical climate that resulted from the First World War, but I digress. You can see that situational irony encompasses small day-to-day events like a man mansplaining what mansplaining means to a woman, to outstanding stories such as feeble tiny hobbits ending up being the most important, strongest figures in an epic saga such as Lord of the Rings, to historically significant events such as World War I. But as common as they are, or perhaps because they are so common, people wrongly attribute irony to situations that aren't truly ironic. Let's talk more about how irony is misused. There's a citation that goes something like, Philip Howard assembled a list of 7 implied meanings for the word ironically as it opens a sentence. Number 1, by a tragic coincidence. Number 2, by an exceptional coincidence. Number 3, by a curious coincidence. Number 4, by a coincidence of no importance. Number 5, you and I know, of course, though other less intelligent mortals will walk benighted under the midday sun, oh ho ho ho. Number 6, oddly enough, or it's a rum thing that... And number 7, oh hell, I've run out of words to start a sentence with. So yeah, the words irony and ironically are notorious for being used incorrectly. Which, by the way, is not ironic because we expect people to not fully understand what irony is, unless they're a dedicated subscriber to this podcast. Anyway, the biggest mistake people make is thinking that anything that happens due to coincidence or luck is irony. You'll hear this all the time, like people saying how ironic it is that you got a parking ticket on the day that you got fired, or that you ran into someone on the streets while you were thinking about them, or that your music player played the exact song the mood you were in. That's just bad luck, good luck, and coinkydink. Similarly, paradoxes such as this statement is false, or clever wordplay such as René Magritte's This Is Not a Pipe painting, are not ironic, because paradoxes don't have a resolution, and René Magritte said exactly what he meant, that this is not a pipe, this is a painting of a pipe. The other misuse of irony is when people try to sound smart and they're being ironic, which we saw a lot particularly with our generation, the infamous millennials, wanting to sound aloof and detached, especially when we were younger. But being cynical or hypocritical isn't necessarily the same as being ironic. People often use irony or irony-adjacent detachment to shield themselves from the awkwardness of life. Like, if we don't care about anything, or if we can make fun of something, nothing can hurt us, right? The writer David Foster Wallace commented on this phenomenon, how we live in an age of postmodernism, where people use self-deprecation, moral relativism, cynicism, and irony as weapons to avoid being hurt by reality. But this just results in more despair and stasis, because if you're only being negative and critical, you end up being destructive rather than constructive. Like, yes, it seems like the world is ending with worsening climate change and political polarization and terrible economic forces. But so what? The postmodernist approach to this is to be cynical of the situation, such as mocking the baby boomers, or to give up and wallow in hopelessness, choosing to further detach themselves from reality and life by making ironic comments such as, oh please, enlighten me with your profound thoughts in 280 characters or less. Or, isn't it charming how our obsession with authenticity has become the most manufactured aspect of our lives? But this doesn't actually achieve anything. You could even call this a form of misusing irony. Even if by definition these statements are ironic, it subjectively feels like a poor use of irony. Instead, we can use irony as a way to get us back on our feet, laugh about the absurdity of life, and move on in a more constructive way. Like the Martin Luther quote, "Even if the world ends tomorrow, I'll plant an apple tree." Just because life seems sucky, it doesn't mean you should stop living. Instead, we can choose actively to look for the things that we do enjoy and things we are excited for and things that we can change. I talk about this a lot more in episode 16 where we discuss optimistic nihilism, so I won't harp on about too much. But it does frustrate me when people use irony in only a destructive way, instead of using it to lighten our pain and suffering and help us identify how absurd a situation is and try to change it. Didn't think an episode about a literary device would turn into a discussion about finding happiness in a bleak world, huh? Instead of finishing today's episode with a 2-minute explain, let's lighten the mood with a song. Specifically, Alanis Morissette's hit song, Ironic, and why the song ironically fails to give good examples for irony. Alright, so by now, you know enough about irony that many situations and things that people say aren't actually ironic. So, let's use the song Ironic to practice and revise our skills. Let's start with the easy ones from the chorus. It's like rain. Well, that's just bad luck. Sure, you want sunshine on a wedding day, but unless you specifically picked a place and time to specifically avoid rain, such as getting married in the Atacama Desert, the driest place in the world, rain is totally not unexpected, especially if you live in Auckland. Again, hard to say it's an unexpected situation when the bus driver has already taken your payment and you were not aware that it's a free ride. That's either ignorance on your part or a scam, not irony. I mean, why didn't you just take the good advice? That sounds like an active choice and has nothing to do with expectations versus reality. It would be ironic if you took advice from someone who doesn't seem like an expert in the area, like getting amazing relationship advice from a 5-year-old kid with no relationship experience. That would be something unexpected that you'd be able to appreciate the irony of, but the 5-year-old wouldn't. Anywho, moving on to some of the stuff from the verses. An old man turned 98. He won the lottery and died the next day. Girl, he's 98. He lived a long life and it's not a surprise to anyone for him to pass away. What would have been ironic would be if he died of a serious paper cut from the lottery ticket. It's a black fly in your Chardonnay. Bad luck, but not even close to irony. It's a death row pardon, 2 minutes too late. Again, a coincidence. A traffic jam when you're already late. That's just bad luck. Unless you rushed to avoid the traffic jam, then crashed your car, and were even more late to work because of it. No smoking sign on your cigarette break. That's just regulations? The list goes on and on and on, to the point that pretty much none of the examples that Alanis Morissette gives in the song is ironic. Hence, the real irony is that a song named Ironic, that you expect to tell you what is ironic, fails to do so. And as much as it's fun to poke fun at the song, so many people have pointed out that the song is linguistically incorrect that it's not even cool to point it out anymore. Even Alanis Morissette is in on the joke now, poking fun at herself by adding the line, "It's singing ironic when there are no ironies" in performances. Anyway, hopefully that was an amusing exercise and now you have a better understanding of irony, so you don't have to embarrass yourself like Alanis Morissette did, making ridiculous amounts of money despite not being ironic. Or being ironic? Who even knows at this point? Hopefully you do. So, what do we learn today? We learned that irony is when you say something that is the opposite of what you mean, or when something happens that is opposite to what you expected. We learned that irony needs a dual audience. Someone who only gets the surface meaning, and someone who understands the deeper opposite meaning, so they can grasp the irony of it. We learned about various types of irony. Verbal, dramatic, situational, and subtypes such as cosmic, poetic, and Socratic irony. We learned that people are really bad at using the word irony, often using it to describe things that are just coincidences or bad luck, like Alanis Morissette did in her song Ironic. We learned that being sarcastic and cynical doesn't make you intellectually superior to other people, it just makes you a butthead. So use irony to laugh with people rather than at people. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Explain This. Hope you learned something interesting and maybe even useful today. We'll see you next time for our 50th episode. Bye for now. Explain This was written and hosted by me, Jin Kim. If you'd like to suggest a topic or just send a lovely message, you can email me at explainthiscast@gmail.com or follow me on Facebook or Twitter